All right, welcome to day three, Microsoft Ignite Australia. How's the first 2 days for you guys? Didn't sound good. I expect you remembered everything, yeah? All right, so this morning, first of all, I want to thank you. I know it was a long night last night for a lot of us here, but hopefully everybody had a good time. I'm very thankful that you guys are here. And in the next hour, I'm going to walk you through on how you accelerate Office 365 success. You know, I live and work in Washington, D.C. As you may imagine, I work a lot with government organizations. And one of the key things that always comes up as I talk to customers about going to the cloud or Office 365, the first words out of their mouth is like the soup Nazi in Seinfeld. No cloud for you. Next. And what's their regular, what's their answer? Why not the cloud? Oh, it's not safe. It's not secure. Right? My servers that I have not updated the patch for the last 3 years is much more secure. But the problem is, friends, it's not that it's not secure. We all know that the cloud is much more secure than any on-premises. It's just the lack of understanding and awareness of what the cloud has, but more importantly, a solid strategy on how we ensure that information is well-governed, well-secured, and it's not going to be breached. So that's what we're going to talk about today, friends. Our session today is very practical. I'm not going to rehash and regurgitate what's already been out there online. You can find a lot of great information on features and function of the technologies, although I'll provide an overview of what Microsoft offers. But I'll walk you through how you think about information governance and strategy. For those that I have not met, my name is Dux Raymond Tsai. I've been working in this industry since 2000, and I'm very fortunate to be working in the cutting edge, working with wonderful technologies and solving real-world problems. Now, the idea for this session is for you, when you go back, because as you know, the days where, oh, I'm a IT pro, I'm a sysadmin, I'm the SharePoint admin, I don't care about security, compliance, that's not my job. That's the security team's job. Oh, compliance, that's the chief privacy officer's job. You know what I'm talking about. Newsflash, those days are gone. We're all on the same boat together. So I want to give you a very practical way on how you think about information governance and compliance in the cloud so we bridge that gap. Because as you know, the problem we have is we are technologists. We can figure out Office 365. And then the people that are in the compliance office and privacy office, they have all these policies and regulations, Sarbanes-Oxley, GDPR, PII, whatever. Y'all with me? But how do we connect those dots? And that's the biggest issue I see a lot in a lot of organizations. Now, what are we going to do today? So we're going to walk through three main areas. One is we're going to talk about the challenge of information governance, especially around the cloud. We're going to talk about why having a solid strategy is very important. And lastly, I'll walk you through a four-step strategy. I'll show you a lot of examples. I have a lot of templates and resources that I'm definitely going to share with you, all right? So, let's first talk about the world we live in. So as we all know, collaboration today comes in many shapes and sizes. Who went to my session yesterday? Went to use what? How was that session? That's why you're back, right? The world is changing. We have different kinds of tools for different reasons, for different purposes. And in a way, it's very good because we're enabling, empowering our business to be able to create, consume, and help them do a better job. But at the same time, with all these benefits around collaboration, we are stuck between a rock and a hard place, right? We want to help our business to be more transparent on how they work, to collaborate better, regardless if it's internal, external, but we are on the hook if something bad happens. Anybody in your company use Dropbox? It's all right. We're all together. You don't have to hide that fact that your business users use Dropbox all day long. But you know how many times Dropbox have been hacked? Yeah. That was from 3 years ago. And that's just one example. Yahoo, major hacks. Box. And I'm not saying, you know, Microsoft is perfect. There's no perfect company out there. But then how do we handle that? How do we deal with that? You know, let me show you, talk to you about another example. So, in Washington, D.C., which is the best place in the world these days, almost like every other week, I hear about a data breach. But one data breach that stuck in my head is about 6 months ago. There's a big news of this big agency that 20,000 names and private information of employees were uploaded to a torrent site, essentially a ground for hackers, and you can get whatever you want, which is bad news. Right? The good news is they caught the perpetrator. The perpetrator was a teenager. And as they arrested this young man, they got to talk to him and said, "Oh boy, you must be so smart. What hacking technique did you use? Did you do major denial of service? What encryption?" It's like, "I don't know what you're talking about. So how'd you do this?" "I was just bored. What'd you do?" "One day, you know, I was trying to figure out if I can get away with it. I went online and just looked at government websites. I found this one agency that, you know, like government websites, it has a directory of people's names and phone numbers. That's it. Oh, for this, you know, if you need customer service, call this person. If you need that, you know what I'm talking about, right?" So you can call people. "Hey, this is IT. We're resetting our systems. What's your password?" He did it on the 11th person. That person gave it up. All right? So what do you do now? You're laughing. You know who they are in your company. So what he did next, "Oh, I wonder if they have a web-based email." He figured it out. He went to the web-based email, and just like we all have, and logged in because he figured out the email, right? He was just looking at that person's email. He said, "I wonder what's in their sent email box." So he found this email. "Okay, HR, here's the export of all our employees' latest information from our employee system. Attached Excel file. Send." That's not even a box. That's not even a Dropbox. It's good old email server, private information sitting in the sent folder. We laugh. You think, "Oh, that's stupid." But that exists in your world today. And we are accountable for it as IT. And more, because of the availability of these tools, unstructured data is all over the place. Now, for those not familiar, when we talk about structured content versus unstructured content, structured are your traditional enterprise systems, from your ERP, your HR system. And when I say structure, it's typically organized in a way where it's properly tagged and classified and secured. So, you know, traditionally, any mission-critical or business-critical related information would sit in structured application. Y'all with me? Yeah. However, these days, the tides have turned. These days, in any organization, 80% of the data information generated sits in unstructured content because of modern technologies. From documents in your file shares, to OneDrive, to SharePoint, to Groups, Yammer, all these are unstructured content. Now, what's the problem, ducks? The problem is, there's a lot of business critical information that sits there. You follow me? I mean, I'm originally from Manila, Philippines, and when I started working in the U.S., I was working in this big government project. My second day, I got an email and says, "Here's our latest schedule for the project." It was an Excel file attached to an email that we track our project schedule. This was a $10 million project, business critical. And I'm sure in your world, you can think about these things where your business users are transacting through unstructured content. Now, why is this a problem, Ducks? You see, the good thing with structured content, because it's organized in a way that we can slice and dice the data, sort, filter, join, tables, it's not true for unstructured content. In fact, most of our unstructured content, we don't even know what's in there. Case in point, if I go to your SharePoint intranet today, anybody using SharePoint for intranet? Okay? If I run an audit and say, I'm going to search and find people's performance evaluation, or will I find any private information in your intranet? I pray to God, I hope not. But you're not confident. We don't know what we don't know. In fact, every user, even myself, I'm guilty of this. I know I have tons of stuff in my OneDrive, and I keep track of what I use day in, day out, from templates to documents that I regularly use, things I need to keep. I don't know if you're as organized. I have a little archive folder that I keep stuff just in case. But then most of the stuff I generate, I don't really know what it is. Especially if I don't tag it correctly, it's hard to find. And in the industry, unstructured content that we don't know of are called dark data. And listen, this is one of the issues why organizations are not too sure about going to the cloud. Because it's not a question of moving content to the cloud. It's a question of what do we move? The days of lifting and shifting, you know, it's like when you're moving houses. I've been married 15 years, and this is the second home we had. I remember the day as we were about to move, we decided to buy a new house, and that was 6 months out. My wife's like, okay, start organizing your stuff, throw away what you don't need, you know, whatever. I'm like, yeah, I'll do it. 2 days before our big move, I just stacked everything in the box. I'll get to it when we move. Now we're in our new house 9 years later, and I had to confess, 2 weekends ago, I had a big fight with my wife because she opened our storage, and I have boxes I haven't opened. That's how we think about migration, yeah? But it's dangerous today because is there important stuff there that shouldn't be there? Did somebody just put, especially in your public sector, citizen information there? And this is what we need to be concerned about. And the good news is, knowing that there's a lot of unstructured content all over the place, it's just going to grow forever, we have to start thinking about putting together an information governance strategy. This won't take weeks. This won't take high-paying consultants. You could do this yourself. There's a lot of value of having information governance plan for your organization. On one hand, we have a lot of unstructured content as a result of modern tools, and we will continue to have it. And on the other hand, we have this threat. Now, what I'm showing here is the most recent report from Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics. I just tweeted it, by the way. If you're following me on Twitter, meet Ducks. Throughout this session, all the references I make is being tweeted. Yes, I'm using a prototype HoloLens here. When I blink, it tweets. But I just tweeted the full report for you. This is scary. Look at this. One breach in the last year. Government has the highest. And that's why I don't blame some of my government customers. I don't want to go to the cloud. But in all reality, it has nothing to do with the cloud. Just like that email example. That government agency was all on premises. Yeah. And this is the time we can't wait to establish confidence. And of all these breaches, check this out. Hackers prove to be far less of a threat than simple human error. I'm sure in that government example I just shared with you, there was a policy that you're not supposed to send private information via email. Imagine if that Excel file was shared via a SharePoint library with permissions. Even if, you know, this hacker got to that email and they click on that link and they don't have permission, they wouldn't be able to get to it. Y'all with me? I don't think people are malicious. Don't get me wrong. People are not malicious. It's just that people don't remember or they're too busy and they can't comply in every compliance rule you have. Case in point. Anybody have SharePoint governance plans in your company? Raise your hand, please. And can you honestly tell me people are following that? No. It's too much. Look at this. What was the source of the last data breach your organization suffered? Lost paper files. Forget technology. I was just keeping up with world events. You know, in Australia a few years ago, there was a situation with a state that certain files were accidentally released. And it caused a lot of problems. I just tweeted this report, too. It's a free report. Just make sure you follow me on Twitter. And the links are on this PowerPoint as well. So what's the cost, right? Because of these threats and because of how human error is the main culprit, this is another report that an organization called Ponemon Institute, every year releases a report on how much does it cost for an organization when a breach happens. The last report from last year, 2016, per breach event, it's $4 million on the average. I feel like that's low. So what does that mean, Docs? So let me give you an example. In the U.S., a few years ago, there was a breach with a retail chain called Target. I don't know if you guys remember Target. There's a major breach where all their credit card holder information somehow got released or was hacked. Something like that. Obviously, you know, they went to court, they settled, and they settled for, I think, over $100 million. I still remember when that happened because my wife, she loves Target. She has a Target credit card. As soon as she heard that on the news, I'm not going to shop at Target again. 2 days later, she got a bunch of coupons. She's back at the store. That was good marketing. But beyond the dollar amount that you may lose, what about your reputation? Right? I mean, again, I hate to pick on Yahoo. Yahoo, nobody cares about Yahoo anymore. What was that? 1 billion user information somehow was hacked? I think it was 1 billion, the last news I saw. Now I think they're thinking about changing their name. Yeah. So this is a problem. And I'm not scaring you. I mean, this may be extreme, but as technologists, we should be aware that this will just get worse if we don't get our act together. So, why do we need information governance strategy? It's just like why we need brakes on the car. Why do we need brakes on our car? Andrew, why do we need brakes on our car? Yeah. So you won't crash and burn. I mean, this is a nice, fast car, but I don't know if you guys watch NASCAR or Formula One racers. They go as fast as they can, but the brakes kind of, if they feel like they're about to crash, they slow down. And that's what information governance is. Information governance allows you to use your data as an asset instead of a risk. Look at it from the other way around. While I talk about dark data from a perspective of you don't know if there's important information there that may be a risk. What about the flip side? You also don't know if there's important information here that you can use for the benefit of your business. For example, I mean, you know, we're a global company, AppPoint. I have colleagues here in Australia. I live and work in Washington, D.C. And as I work in proposals, wouldn't it be great? I don't have to restart a proposal because my colleague in Australia already did something like that and because the data is easily accessible, or I can find it, it's an asset for me, I can save time, I can reuse it, all that good stuff. So that's the strategy and that's the goal. How do we use our information as an asset, especially as we invest in the cloud? Now, speaking of the cloud, before I walk you through strategy, what does Microsoft offer? Okay, so I will give you a high-level overview of the differences of this information security and information governance technologies to give you an understanding how they're different from each other. So first things first, what Microsoft offers in the cloud, right, is data loss prevention. The idea of data loss prevention is to protect your entire system. In this case, as we talk about Office 365, the purpose of DLP is to protect the entire Office 365 stack. Y'all with me? Not just one thing or one piece of content. And in Office 365, there's a technology called Compliance Center. With Compliance Center, you can go in there and put policies and say things like, for example, we are not going to allow anybody to post or upload content that has credit card numbers. Y'all follow me? It can apply to OneDrive, a SharePoint library. And as soon as you put that policy in place, in fact, you can specify as to who the policy applies to as well, which is great. It comes with Office 365. Now, it depends on what SKU you have. Yeah, you want E3 or there's different variations on when you have to pay extra for this or when you get it. I think E5 you get it. So just look at the SKU you have. So that's the idea. It's protecting the entire Office 365 stack. Next is CASB. CASB stands for Cloud Access Security Broker. It's more around identity and it's protecting the access. So it's looking at the who. Everybody with me? So you can do things. It's called the technology is called Azure Cloud App Security. This was an acquisition, a company they bought a little over a year ago. It's a company called Adalom. And then they changed the name to Cloud App Security. And it's looking at security management from the user, the person. Huh? Next is RMS, Rights Management System. In fact, to be more specific, as we focus on information, there are a lot of different technologies that Microsoft provides. One is Azure Information Protection. Who's used this or looked at Azure Information Protection? It's very good. I'll show an example in a second. As the name implies, Azure Information Protection looks at the file, right, and the content in the file. The same way, I'm sure a lot of you have seen this in Office, for example. Office has information rights management. You know how you can go to Excel and lock the file and put a password and you email that Excel unless that person has a password, they can't open the Excel file? Have you tried that? Yeah. So at a high level, there's a lot of other information security technologies, but these are some of the core ones. Now, the other aspect or the other consideration that you have to think about is this idea of how do I protect information that's information or data-centric, right? Because if we look at these three pillars, it serves different purposes, protecting the system, the access, and the file. But more and more, as information flows through different platforms, different files, and different people, the way we should think about information governance should be data-centric. It should be across, regardless of what system, internal or external, it should be enterprise-wide, and your data governance framework should take that into consideration. That's what we're going to walk through. Is this helpful, friends? Okay. So, this is good, ducks. I know what the problems are today. I know the value. I know what, at a high level, what Microsoft gives me. So, how do I do all this? All right. So, in our remaining time, I'm going to walk you through strategy, a very practical strategy. I'm going to show you resources that you can take advantage of as well on how you develop your information governance framework. There's really four steps, right, to do this. And by the way, this four steps is not in a serial manner. You constantly do this. The first step is before you can do anything, you got to have a good idea of what you have. And again, the focus I have here, or what I recommend, is your unstructured data. Because most likely your structured data and structured systems are relatively well taken care of. It's the unstructured stuff that's a concern, right? Nasty! Is that your house? I hope not. But I bet that's your digital home. You guys ever watch that show, Hoarders? Is that here in Australia as well? It's one of those shows that's so bad yet so good, you just can't seem to get away from it. It's like a total wreck every time you watch it. It's like that TV show Sharknado, right? You keep watching it. It's like you find joy in the misery of others. That's how our world is. We don't even know what we have, right? To have a solid information governance strategy, first things first, we got to know what we have. So how do we think about figuring out what we have? Number one, where is the source of your unstructured content? Is it FileShare, SharePoint, Office 365, databases? Where is it? Well, hold on, ducks. I mean, I have a good idea, the sources, the location, but there's just so much stuff out there. How do I look at this stuff? As you look at it, the first layer of analysis is you got to understand the type of files you have. Don't worry about the content in the file. Because, you know, we go through this process here is, first things first, you want to do an inventory, right, of how much redundant, outdated, and trivial data you have. I guarantee you, I think it's 60 to 75% of unstructured content is rot. You know how your users love to rename the same thing, different file names? Underscore BAK. Underscore BAK underscore BAK. Just in case. But it's all in the same folder. I don't get that. Now, that's the first thing you have to do. Now, I'm sure you're wondering now, well, ducks, how do I do this? Right? There's no way I could do it manually. Of course, there's no way you could do it manually. There's a lot of free tools out there. You just do a search on what's called file discovery tool. In fact, Microsoft has a discovery tool for SharePoint, only specific to SharePoint. Microsoft released it last September. Just go to the, you know, just go online and do a search. SharePoint migration discovery tool. And you'll find it from Microsoft, but it only looks at SharePoint. We give away a discovery tool. You just go to AppPoint, look for AppPoint discovery tool, and it could look at different file sources, not just SharePoint. So let me give you an example here. Let me pull it up. Here, I think this is a good example. You guys see that? Okay. So let me kind of show you an example of a discovery tool, and I'll walk you through the beauty of this. So I ran our discovery tool against a file share, actually I think two file shares, and it spit out a simple Excel report for me, right? In fact, I will zoom it in. And I want to provide you some context. You know, every time we help customers or talk to customers think about going to the cloud, we got to first understand what they have, right? So in this case, right, it just ran through. It says, okay, we found all these files. It's a file. It's a folder. The file size is all good. But it also assesses it if it's going to migrate easily or not. The green means low risk for migration. Yellow, it's a problem because it has illegal characters. We all know about that problem, right? The file names on your file share doesn't really, the rules doesn't work for the web. Red, because it exceeds 50 megabytes, but the default library may be smaller, what have you. So at the very least, you get a high-level understanding of what you have. Now, another example I want to show is, let me go to here and minimize this. Apart from having an inventory of what you have, we can slice and dice the data. Show me all the duplicates. Right? So look at that. And the duplicates doesn't necessarily mean that they have the same file name. Look at these things. They don't have the same file name, but the other properties are very, very similar. Create modified access. How does that help you? So, pop quiz. Tell me, by knowing this up front, how does this help you? Save space, okay. I mean, it's good, but the cloud's unlimited. That's not... Data integrity. What else? Single source of truth? What's a typical feedback when you're doing some kind of migration? What's a feedback from your users?
How long it takes to upload.
How long it takes? What, and what else? I want to keep everything.
Don't lose anything.
Yeah, just in case. Even your 12-year-old files that you've never touched. So now you can come back and say, okay, what's important to you? You have all these things. Because the problem is, IT's always looked upon, IT keeps saying no. No, you do your analysis and you go back to the business and say, hey, here's what I found. Yeah. What do you want to keep? What do you want to keep? Even better, if they keep saying, well, I want to keep everything, blame it on compliance. Anybody have retention policies in your organization? Well, our retention is 5 years. So the rule is, anything over 5 years that you haven't touched, gone. And it's far more important today because Freedom of Information Act, for example, in public sector, right? If you keep anything, the requirement is 5 years, at least in federal government in the U.S., but if you still have it, you have to show it. That's why those 8-year-old emails had to surface. And this is good conversation point. This is what you have, and this is our policy. Next. Now, this is great docs, but it's Excel, right? It's not. It's hard to digest. How else can we show this in a much more consumable way? So I'm going to show you another example. So what I did is I took that data. Give me 1 second here. I took that data and pumped it into Power BI. Okay? And the beautiful part about this example, so let me, I'm trying to look, okay, site density. Okay. So what I could do now is I present this to the business and say something like, okay, let's look at all the stuff I found in this site collection and then show me anything. It's kind of small, let's see. That was last modified in 2014. Yeah, and this is what I have. Y'all see that? I think nothing was in 2014. Let me just do select all. So long story short, by visualizing the data in this way, it's the same data from that Excel file, but presenting back to the business and say, look, this is how much we have. Do we need it? Do we not need it? Makes it more digestible. Y'all follow me? Is this helpful? And besides, people love dashboards. That's a secret to career success, by the way. When you go back to work on Monday and you see your boss first, just one word, dashboard. You're promoted. Power BI helps you get promoted, I tell you. Now, so that's the first step, friends. Next, as we think about, understanding what we have, by the way, I want to share a story. This is a scary story, but it's true. We think about files, just text files. I was speaking with another customer 2 years ago. In fact, I was in Quebec. I was in Montreal speaking with a public sector customer. They were telling me about this issue in the university. A few years ago, two university students from Quebec fled and unfortunately joined ISIS. And these two young girls were quite young, and they're trying to figure out how were they recruited as they were going to school. So they investigated, and they found in their dorm computer, they noticed there's a bunch of bootleg movies, Avengers, MP4, right? So they decided, let me watch this, or the investigators watch it. It's a bunch of recruitment videos. Now here was the problem. All these videos were stored in the university network. Because you know how every student has their own file share storage? And obviously the university is like, oh, we don't know what they have, dark data. Is that an excuse? So there's these legal issues now. So apart from understanding if you have rot, you got to understand what kind of content you have in there. You may have illegal content. You don't know. Now, once you identify what files you have, what you want to keep, what you want to get rid of, next, this is important. Well, even if you reduce this to what you want to keep, you can't protect them all. That's a reality. There's still going to be a lot. Y'all follow me? The next step is you want to understand, of these files, unstructured data, I want to keep, what's in it? We can't have social security number. We can't have personal information. Those are top of mind. So you should do a content level analysis where you work with the business to figure out what you need to secure. Now, there are three types of data that typically you would want to secure. In the industry, these things are known and called as controlled workloads. You'll see that world when you talk to chief privacy officers and chief security officers. What controlled workloads do you need to secure? One, you may want to secure regulated data. These data that requires retention and long-term archives. So if you're bounded by, for example, the VARS compliance. Anybody familiar with that? The records management compliance? That falls under regulated data. And what happens if you violate that compliance? Fines and prosecution, right? Another example, sensitive data. This typically includes personal information about employees or citizens. A good example of this that's coming, anybody heard of GDPR? Raise your hand, please. This is something you have to know. Okay, let me explain what this is. GDPR stands for General Data Protection Regulation. It's out of Europe. It's a European compliance standard that will take effect in May. Now, why do I care, Docs? We're in Australia. Well, it may seem like it only applies to Europe, actually applies to the whole world. Essentially, the rule says if your organization, be it a private company or a government organization, and you have European citizen data, y'all follow me? You should have ways and means to protect it. Because if something bad happens or you get audited and we find that you're not protecting it, we don't expect you to be 100% foolproof, but if you're not protecting it, this is the scary part. Your organization will be fined up to 4% of your gross revenue. So any organization here that has European citizen data? Yeah, maybe some. Yeah. Look it up. This takes effect in May. Right. And what's the consequence? Fine, loss of reputation. And lastly, the third type of control workload is classified data. This would be things like, you know, business secrets, country secrets. And let me share a real example. I shared this in my session yesterday. We have a customer that I was speaking with in San Diego. It's a medical, they are in the medical industry, and they're saying, you know, Docs, before we told our employees, BYOD and use any technology you want, because, you know, we have that Silicon Valley hipster cool culture. You want to use Box, Dropbox, whatever. So all their salespeople use their own personal file sharing, from sending proposals to whatever about the company, they use their personal Box, Dropbox, whatever. But there's one of their top sales guys left and joined the competition. Well, guess what? Even if he left and gave up his company laptop, company email, a lot of company secrets are in his personal Dropbox that the company has no access to. Y'all follow me? And they said, I kid you not, we have one product we're about to launch. They went to the market 2 months ahead of us, and we know for a fact that they had our plans because of this salesperson leaving. It's no joke. Is that important for you? Yeah. So once you understand and you talk to the business what's important for you, you take those files you want to keep and run a content analysis and figure out what controlled workloads that's important to you that's in there. Oh, we found this much PII. We found this much social security number, bank account, whatever. Because this is, I did a scan with a government customer, and these things are important to them, right? Everybody see that? Another example. This is just another way to look at it, right? Run a scan, how much we have. And by the way, this doesn't only apply to existing content you want to move. This can also be content today in the cloud. And that's the kind of stuff things like Compliance Center, Azure Information Protection offers. And if those things aren't enough and you want more, there's a lot of technologies out there that can provide these types of analysis and report for you. Yeah, I pulled these reports from our technology called Compliance Guardian. Not only did I look at FileShare, SharePoint, this also looked at Box as well. We're good so far, friends? Okay, next. Once you understand what you have, and you decide what you want to keep, and you decide what type of information you want to protect, the next step is you want to make sure content is properly tagged and classified. I know. This is one of those things you've tried forever, but just doesn't happen. Who's went through that exercise setting up your taxonomy, information architecture, term store, custom columns? And then what do you tell user? You know, when you upload that Word document, make sure you tag the right tags and then upload it to the library. Do they do it? No. And what do you do next? You make those fields required. So when they upload, it won't let them upload, right? You think that will fix it. Does it fix it? No. What the users would do, they'd say, you know what, forget this. I'm just going to email an attachment. Because our issue is, friends, we made it too complex. Less is more, simple is more. So when you think about tagging and classification, I'll show you an example later. Really, at the minimum, keep it around these three things, right? Bare minimum. Number one, educate your business and work with your business to understand the sensitivity level of the document. Because step one, that's what you want to protect. You can't protect them all. Is it secret? Is it top secret? Is it confidential? Whatever kind of sensitivity scheme you want to use, take advantage of that. Identify retention. Should we keep this 5 years? Anybody bounded by Sarbanes-Oxley? So what's the rule, Sarbanes-Oxley? Financially related data should be kept for 7 years. Finish with managed keywords for search. And this is one of those things you work with the business to identify what the managed keywords are. So just keep it along these three levels of classification. And later I'll show you, in fact, how you can automate these classifications as well with Microsoft technologies. Now that you've understood what you have, what you want to keep, what you want to protect, and how you're going to tag it, the next step to put together a strategy is define your data governance policies. How do you know where to park? How do you know where to park? Michelle, how do you know where to park? Like when you go to a mall or an open parking lot like this, what's your preference for parking?
I have a step counter, so I want to park.
That's right. You have a step counter. You want to park as far as you can, right? Now, a little disclaimer. People were telling me yesterday, Ducks, I know why you're walking around all the time because you don't want to stand next to the presenter yesterday. No, that wasn't true. I have a step counter, too. I'm competing with somebody. I told them I'm going to have a lot of steps this week, so. Anyway, so she wants to park as far. How about you, sir? Where do you park?
Closest to the entrance.
Sir, you?
Same,
right? Now, the beautiful thing is everybody has their own preference where to park and how to park, but accidents rarely happen in parking lots. Rarely. Unless you're driving a Ute. No, just kidding. I'm trying here. Why is that? Why do you think, in spite of everybody's different preference, why is that everybody kind of follow a base set of rules? Structured, what else? It's simple. Y'all with me? Okay, here you drive on your left, and then you park in between the lines. That's it. And then you put on your little rules. The problem, friends, when we think about governance policies, we make it so difficult. It's just like the Constitution. You guys have a Constitution, right? Anybody read the Constitution for Australian citizens here? Raise your hand if you read it page to page. See? Shame on you. In all fairness, I haven't read the U.S. Constitution either, so. I'm an American, yeah. Well, I'm beginning to read it more lately. Anyway. We're on Channel 9, right? Okay. Why? Why have you not read the Australian Constitution?
It's too long.
It's too long? No, I agreed. Right? No, it's good. It's good for me. I know it's good for me. Maybe I'll truly read it one day if somebody takes me to court. But for now, I know it protects me. It's good. Whatever. But the other issue is, not only it's too long, I don't see the relevancy in my day-to-day life. Y'all with me? Rewards and consequences. Versus this, the rule is park between the lines. If I don't, I'll ding my car, I'll ding somebody's car, and I'll have to pay money. I know the rule, if the stoplight says red, I stop, or else I get a ticket or get an accident. I know that if I'm home in Washington, D.C., I gotta be at home at the latest by 10 p.m. during the week, or else I'll get in trouble with my upper management, my wife. Because there are rewards and consequences. So at the same time, when you think about information governance and defining our policy, approach it from a very pragmatic way and educate your business and your organization on what the rewards and consequences are. So let me walk you through a very simple approach, and I'll show you an example of a policy. When you think about information governance policy, this is different than what you're used to when you think about SharePoint governance. Okay? The difference is when in the days of SharePoint governance, and you still need that, don't get me wrong, SharePoint governance is around what we call the application or SharePoint or where content will reside. Right? Your governance would be, okay, you can't change permission, you can't give people full control, make sure if you're not using it, you move it to Record Center, whatever. So the governance, when we think about SharePoint governance, it's around SharePoint, the application, the container. You all follow me? When we talk about information governance, we don't really care if it's SharePoint or FileShare or OneDrive or Groups or Teams. What we care about is how do you put the rules and policy about the information, regardless of where it resides in Office 365. So, to define your policy, first, you build controls into your container. A container is where the information would live. What are the controls? The controls would be your policy. For example, right? For example, let me use SharePoint as an example because all of us are familiar with this. When you create a project site and you're the site owner, make sure that there's no social security number or credit card number in your library or your list, right? That is the control. And the second step to define your policy is make sure no one messes with it. How many of you have issues with permissions in SharePoint in your organization or even Office 365? You know, the biggest issue with SharePoint or, in fact, SharePoint Online is site sprawl, you know, random sites all over the place. The second biggest issue is permissions is a mess, right? Hey, Andrew, since you're a site owner, you know, last night I bought you 3 rounds of Guinness. Can you hook me up, give me full control as well? Yeah. And then I create my subsites. It's a mess. But you have to make sure no one messes with it. Third is ensure the system is used as intended. How many of you have seen project sites just dwindle and sitting there and it ended up become a department site or a OneDrive library suddenly became a project site, right? So make sure your policy is straightforward and simple and looks at these 3 key areas. So, friends, let me pull up a sample policy which I downloaded. There's an organization called IAPP, International Association of Privacy Professionals, and it's a nonprofit. You can join, you can download stuff. They set standards and share information around data governance and information compliance. So, hold on. So this is a sample, very simple, and obviously there's details to each of this policy. It's like a 2-3 page, right? So you take this, formulate it with your business leads, and then come to agreement on how you're going to enforce it and take advantage of it. So there's that. Let me show you IAPP in a second here. I think I have it right here. So, So this is IAPP, and we've been working with them. It's a nonprofit, so we provide a lot of resources around technology and compliance. In fact, we donated a software to them. It's free. You guys can download it. It's called Privacy Impact Assessment. It's a simple survey around your organization where it can assess on where you're at in the maturity of information security and governance. So check that out. I'm sure in your organization, who's a member of IAPP? Or do you know if you guys are involved with them? Yeah, most likely it's the privacy professionals and privacy office that goes to this site. But check it out because they have a lot of great resources. Yep. Now, once you've defined your policy, this is the example I had. So let's quickly walk through this. So policy, our policy for a project site for the container, right? The controls we want to put are things like, do you want to control if we're going to enable external sharing? Do we need to classify content? Because we have to subscribe to Sarbanes-Oxley, we have to tag it with, you know, financial related tag. What about data sovereignty? Anybody have to deal with that? Yeah, for large global companies. That's why Microsoft has invested a lot in data centers around the world to keep your data local. Is that something you're bounded by? What about actual security and ownership? So having these types of consideration when you put together information, governance policy is very, very important. Next step. So just to recap, right? You got to know what you have. You need to know what you want to keep and protect. Number two, you got to know the type of policy you want to put in place. And number three, how do you enforce these things? Today, I've given up on relying on people to follow every single rule. I want to take advantage of technology. And we could do that. We can proactively enforce it so that we're going to minimize any risk or breaches as much as we can. You know, every technology rollout, it's hard, right? That's why email, while it's a 1973 technology, yes, that's how old email is, it's still the go-to tool for everybody. Do you agree? Because it's not that people don't want SharePoint or OneDrive or groups, but it's easy. Change is hard, right? So we covered a lot of stuff yesterday. I talked about sustainable adoption. I've shared those resources with you. So knowing this, right, how do you reduce big change and make the impact as minimal? One of the ways is by automating and proactively enforcing these information governance policies, because maintaining policy compliance can be challenging, especially in today's world. I'm pretty sure that even if you're invested in the cloud and going to the cloud, you still have investments on-prem. And guess what? As the footprint of your technology investment increases, it's not like you're going to have a lot of people that you can hire to take care of it. So what do you do, right? As a result, you delegate to non-admins, which oftentimes are the reason why we get in trouble. Human error, right? And it's very difficult for us to address policy violations because we only have... Okay. Last April, I was speaking in Washington, D.C. Before I went to speak, somebody said, break a leg, ducks. And I fell off the stage. I broke my leg. Okay. We get in trouble, right? So what should we do? First things first. We got to automate Office 365 governance. And when I talk about Office 365 governance, I'm talking about the infrastructure, the entire Office 365 infrastructure. The good news is if you go to central admin in Office 365, there's a lot of capabilities and tools to help you automate some of the governance policies for the infrastructure. And Microsoft is investing heavily in providing more mechanisms and ways for you to automate this. For example, I don't know if you saw this, in SharePoint 2016 and even SharePoint Online, they provided a better way and a more mature way to request for sites. It's not just, hey, which template do you want, right? There's more intelligence now on how to provision sites and the type of protection we can put. We can proactively enforce these policies. Just going back to my example, once the site is provisioned, how do you prevent people from changing permissions? How do you ensure that people aren't creating new subsites or deleting libraries that they shouldn't? Automate all that. And having some kind of complete control across your infrastructure is necessary so that users won't get in trouble as much as they have. The other layer of automation is around information. And I'll show examples in a second. So two things, right? We automate the infrastructure governance, and next is the information compliance. They shouldn't upload credit card number, so we turn on Compliance Center. They should not post this content in Yammer, for example. So automate a lot of that, so we make it easy for them to do the right thing. So here's an example of Azure Information Protection. If you turn it on, and in fact, the beauty of this, it works even in Office, as they save something to a library, for example, and you require a certain level of classification, and your users don't tag it, it reminds them, hey, make sure you pick the right classification. Y'all see that? Because this is critical, so it knows if it's going to the right place or not. Another example. What if, Ducks, I'm in a hybrid environment? I have SharePoint online, I still have SharePoint on-prem, and I want these policies to work across both. Well, Microsoft has a lot of great compliance investment in the cloud. A lot of it don't come back on-prem. So here's an example. This is from a customer I was working with where their use case is this. It's a Friday afternoon, 5 o'clock. Joe needs to upload his daily documents, SharePoint online. He doesn't have time to classify it and wants to go home. Policy says that everything that goes into SharePoint online must be classified and restricted information must not be shared with everyone. So he went in on top of Compliance Center, Azure Information Protection. He took advantage of our Compliance Guardian, put the policies, and let's see what happened. So Joe took all his files from his My Documents folder and uploaded to a library. He just dragged and dropped everything and took off. Now, two things happened, friends. Number one, it tagged it automatically for Joe based on what's in there. Y'all with me? It didn't even tell Joe, hey, you have to tag it. You know what, Joe? I'll do it for you. It tagged it for Joe. Next, not only did it classify it, it saw one of the files has sensitive information. It's not based on the file name. It actually looked at the content and found sensitive information, payroll information. So what it did, it took this file and moved it to a quarantine area, which is only accessible maybe by two people, and alerts went out, hey, Joe uploaded this information. You may want to look at it and see. And then maybe Joe's boss was emailed. This is the third time Joe's done this, what have you. Y'all follow me? I mean, we're not out there to get Joe. We're helping Joe. It's great if he does it by himself, but if he doesn't, there's a plan B behind the scenes that will take care of it. You like this stuff? It's good. Now, having these proactive automated enforcement across your deployments can not only be more beneficial to protect information, but it can help you as well, so you don't have to deal with this stuff. It just works behind the scenes. The goal is we want to make it easy for users to do the right thing. That's it. Our job is we got to make it easy for users to do the right thing. Microsoft provides all the tools for you to do the right thing. Our job now is take all of it, figure out automation so that our users don't have to think about it or worry about it as much as they can. Another example. Anybody use Matter Center for Office 365? Oh, this is great. Matter Center was originally introduced for legal industry, you know, lawyers, whatnot. Because apparently lawyers love to send attachments. Not just lawyers, docs, everybody. So there was a couple of customers talked to Microsoft. Is there a way that we leave these lawyers or partners or counsels or arbitrators to keep using email and sending attachment, but somehow automatically take those attachments, put it in a library, and just link get sent. Y'all follow me? So Microsoft invested in that. They came up with Matter Center. While it seems like it's for lawyers, it's actually anybody can use this. Just look it up. Go to Matter Center, and you can use it if you have Office 365. It's pretty cool. The only catch is you have to be all in. Exchange Online, SharePoint Online, OneDrive, Office 2016, or Office 365 Pro Plus, and this thing will work. Yeah, it's very cool. Well, Ducks, this is great, but what about on-prem? I'll talk about on-prem in a second, or hybrid. Another scenario, how do we make it easy for users to do the right thing? External collaboration. Office 365 has the ability to do external collab. Now, just use this with a grain of salt. I'm sure through time this will be updated. But the beauty is, you know, a common use case for users, that's why they use these external sharing tools like Box or Dropbox and what have you, is while Office 365 is great, my customer, my partner, the other agency doesn't have access. So Microsoft provided this capability to do external sharing across sites, calendar, and other stuff. Some organization may want it to have more granular control of this, but for now, if you enable this, your users would be able to do external sharing, across whoever they want to share with, right? But it's there. So again, making it easy for users to do the right thing without using other tools. Now, what about on-prem or hybrid? I kind of like the idea, Ducks, that users can just use what they're comfortable with, send an email with an attachment, but we still take care of it. So let's look at that. File sharing. Excuse me. So I'm in my Outlook, and I'm sending an email. Notice there's a Word document, whatever. I'm going to hit send. So similar to the concept of Matter Center, I'm using a tool here called Office Connect that works with Office 365, and as soon as I hit send, it automatically took that file, uploaded it to a default library, or you can change the library. Not only it deposited that file based on who you're sending it to, for the to address, edit permissions were assigned, for the CC view or read permission was assigned. Everybody with me? The users don't have to do anything. Just hit send. And as soon as they do that, the email itself will not have the attachment. It'll just have a link to the file in the library. Y'all follow me? Yeah. So not only are we preventing people from sending attachment, but we're protecting the integrity of the file. So the issue around, you know, sitting in the sent folder will be diminished. Another example, making it easy for users to do the right thing. I'm working on my PowerPoint, and I decide, you know what? I need to work with Laura or Eric on this PowerPoint. So in PowerPoint, I can click on a button that looks like it's native to PowerPoint. I'm going to share this with these people. As soon as I hit share, it's going to automatically take this file, upload it to a library, send the link, and I'll just sit there and wait, and my people I want to work with will just jump on here and co-author with me. Everybody see that? Yeah? Another example, external collaboration. So, again, Office 365 has phenomenal collaboration and external sharing capabilities, but what if you want more granularity and more capability? So, I mean, and this is my colleague Luke. He's in a library. He has all these files, and he decides he wants to share it with somebody on Hotmail. And the beauty of this is we're empowering our users, but still making sure we're protecting information. I want to share this somebody at Hotmail. He can define permission level. Guess what? He can also define expiration. You can time bomb it. Y'all with me? It's like Snapchat for the enterprise. If you don't know what Snapchat is, ask your kids. Okay. Now, what happens? When Luke hits share, or okay, an email gets sent to that Hotmail account, just like an experience with OneDrive or Dropbox, and that person will have a click on that link, and they'll go to what's called in the industry, it's called a temporary data room. They don't have access to your library or SharePoint. It's kind of like this place where we collaborate, but all the content that you share with me is there. And any updates that's done here will be synced back to the source in the library where it came from. And the beauty with this now is we're making it easy for users to do external collab But at the same time, IT can see, oh, today, who shared stuff externally? You can pull reports and alerts and what have you.
Yep.
Now, I'm going to share this other story. So I was showing this to a customer, a defense customer in the U.S., and they're like, well, Docs, this is great, but there are really sensitive data that we only want the recipient to open it in a certain location. Y'all with me? It's a concept of geofencing, okay? Even though we're going to this is part of multi-factor authentication. We're going to authenticate their identity. We want to authenticate their location. So I recorded a demo here. So I put a policy and said, okay, Docs can only access a SharePoint site or a file in the office and in his house. If he go to a local coffee shop, even though he logs in with his appropriate username and password, he can't open it. So let's see what happens. So I was working from home. I'm working from my Mac. I log in to my team site. And as soon as I logged in, it picked up that the IP address is not work IP. So it flashed a QR code because my Mac doesn't have a GPS device. So I put my iPhone up. I use an app, took a picture of this QR code, authenticated my location. And if I'm in the right place, my SharePoint site would now load. It can work for SharePoint Online as well. Now, as from an IT perspective, what if I want to audit and check who's doing what? I can log in to this portal called Perimeter. It's like Central Admin. And as I look at this, notice, you know, there's a lot of features here. I can look at what's shared externally, but I want to look at where what content was accessed. So Docs accessed this URL from this specific location. And when I click on that, it comes up, voila, long live Big Brother. Now, I'm not saying you have to have it, but depending on your use case and your business needs, the good news is these capabilities are there. We want to make it easy for users to do the right thing. Step four, to establish a solid information governance strategy, right? What happened to my PowerPoint? One second. We got to have the ability to effectively report, oh, there you go, and audit what goes on within our organization. In a lot of organizations, every year they have a recertification process, making sure that your information is protected. In some places, they call it attestation or annual review, what have you. And you want to check it. And the way to do this is you have to have a way to understand who's accessing what, who owns it, and how it's being classified. Okay? So, I'm going to show you a couple of things to kind of solidify this. So, first things first. So, I want to go back to to my example earlier as we start discovering what we have, right? So when we talk about discovery, one of the key things too, as you put in your findings, is as you think about moving to the cloud or moving a lot of unstructured content, you want to have a solid way to assess, and I'll share this kind of assessment example. So this is an example of I scrubbed out the customer's name, but the discovery and the auditing and findings and whatnot for a specific customer I was working with. But the idea is you should have a solid plan and recommendation on understanding what you have, what you want to keep, what you want to protect, and then you also define how you report and audit and manage in case bad things happen. Everybody with me? Yeah. By the way, do you guys want all these templates other than the PowerPoint? All right, good. All right. I'll make sure I'll zip it up in like a 10 gig zip file and email it to you, yeah? No worries. I'll package all this up. So this is very helpful to think about how you set your strategy together and key things you need to look at, yeah? So there's that. In addition, from an incident management perspective, let me move this here. We're not saying that you're going to be 100% foolproof, right? Just like what the GDPR requires, you got to do your best, put ways and means to protect data, and if bad things happen, you have to be able to prove that you caught it, and then you took care of it. Just like my example earlier, where Joe uploaded documents where he didn't tag, and there was a file that wasn't supposed to be there, but the system took care of it. Everybody with me? That's what we mean by incident management. We're not going to, put it under the rugs. We're going to prove that we caught bad things happen, and then we took care of it. That's what incident management's about. Azure has those mechanisms for you, and Microsoft is continually investing in a lot of these great technologies. So, four steps to develop your information governance strategy, friends. Number one, you got to know what you have. You got to identify what you want to keep and what you want to protect. Step two, you have to define a very pragmatic information or data governance policy, and you proactively enforce these policies with all the technologies that the cloud offers. And lastly, you have to have ways and means to report and audit incidents and the type of data that you have. Last thing I want to show you is, again, you got to take advantage of what Microsoft gives you. I want to show you some of the things we could do with Power BI, for example. I think it's here. Okay, there you go. Oops. So what I'm doing here is I'm looking at a specific tenant. There you go. And I'm pulling up, I'm using Power BI, and I'm pulling up information about SharePoint Online and OneDrive and what have you. So it shows me this is how much sites, how much content I have. I can look at things like user reports. I can drill down and understand who's my most active user, least active user, departments, what have you, and all this through Power BI. So this helps me with my day-to-day type of reporting. Everybody see that? So I can have visibility. But even better, let's say I want to get into things like incident management. So this is kind of like Google Analytics on steroids, if you may, for your Office 365 tenant. But if I want to get into things like incident management, which one was it? Okay, good. I can pull up and see, and certainly there's alerts around here. I can pull up and see if anything has happened, and if anything has happened, what did we do about it, right? So I can go into, in addition to Azure Information Protection or EMS, there was one here around, oh, incident management. Okay, there you go. So I can look at, based on the policies that I've defined, I can tell, okay, there you go. So this is, again, SharePoint Online, and these are some of the recent incidents. And I can look at, somebody put this tax, there's a file called tax statement.doc, and then it's going to show me what happened, why this was a violation, and what the system did to take care of it. Yeah. So it documented the time and who did it and what the taken actions were, what the scans are. So we added the tag, we redacted tax ID, we quarantined the file. Everybody see that? So this is the way, if you get audited, you'll be able to prove that, look, we took care of it. And more, as we leverage the cloud and the capabilities of the cloud and all these new workloads, you got to have a strategy to make sure you're well protected. So the good news is not everybody's the same. There's a lot of technologies and capabilities. It's not all or nothing, be it if you're all in the cloud, there's solutions for you. If you're on-prem or IaaS, even if Microsoft today doesn't have a specific capability that you require because of the huge ecosystem Microsoft has and the ability for technologies to be built against Microsoft, you have a lot of great options. So with that, I hope you found this session beneficial, and here are some of the resources. What do you guys think? Is this useful? All right. This slide will be made available, and in the Ignite site, I can only put the slides. If you want all these other resources I've shown you, from Excel file to PowerPoint, reports, and whatnot, the easiest way is just stop by our booth and just tell my colleagues you want this stuff. They'll scan you, and then we'll send you a package with a link that you can get all this. All right? If you have questions, feel free to stay. And before I forget, tonight will be an epic night. Make sure you fill out the session evaluation. We greatly appreciate your evals. And what is it? Oh, public service announcement. All right. Thank you. I'll read this in a second. So make sure to fill out eval, and then you have the chance to win this or get to fly drones. All right? So before I let you go, I have to read this. If you have parked your vehicle on level 1 car park, please move it urgently or else you'll be towed. I thought we just talked about parking. Anyway. 016RDJ, yellow gets, 116VPM, silver Saab, 36, is it your car? Okay, TVK, black Ford, 519RLW, silver Jeep, ZZC135, gunmetal BMW, 623LJR, it's a lot of cars, silver Lancer, QMH86, 044WOJ. All right, please move it. Other than that, thank you, and enjoy the rest of the conference.